Hello, Podhead. Surprise, surprise. Welcome to another and our first emergency episode. Kylie and I hopped on to give you some live updates. If you're from Arkansas, like I am, and or lived in Arkansas, like Kate and Kylie, you might have heard of a rapist and murderer on the loose in Arkansas as we speak. I wanted to hop on, give you an emergency episode, let you know what this man has done, who he is, who his victims are, and to kind of remain vigilant.
Yes, and perhaps if Holly catches him, an on-air interview.
And I'm sure you and your crazy uncle that's probably hunting him. Everyone in Arkansas would love to be out trying to like find him in the woods. I'm sure there are people looking for him right now. So yeah, let's just hop into our first emergency episode.
Wee-oo, wee-oo.
So this is a case that actually spans nearly three decades, and it starts with a brutal assault inside of a school in 1997. And it ends, well, it should have ended, with a man behind bars for rape and murder. But instead, we're talking about this case today because that man, Grant Hardin, is gone. He's escaped and he's on the run. This story will make you question everything, like how close a murderer can live to you without you even realizing it. It starts Sunday morning, November 9th, 1997. Amy Harrison, a young school teacher in Rogers, Arkansas, gets up and goes to work. It's a quiet morning. She's actually wearing sweatpants and a t-shirt. If you noticed, it's Sunday morning. So I think she's just going into the school to do like a little bit of like work on the weekends before the school day starts on Monday. And there's actually a church service going on in the gymnasium of the vacant school, or, you know, the unused school at the moment. So she goes and she locks herself inside of her classroom while the church service is going on down the hall because she doesn't want to interrupt them. She doesn't want to be interrupted, blah, blah, blah. And so she says that this is like a really big classroom. It's actually two separate classrooms and the wall's been knocked down in the middle. So she's got this huge open area to herself. Around 10:30, she hears someone jiggle the door handle. She gets up, she goes and checks, and no one's there. She closes the door again. But a few minutes later, she decides that she's going to head to the teacher's lounge. She used the restroom. It's just about 15 to 20 feet down the hallway. So she steps in the bathroom. She does what she needs to do. She opens the door, and standing there is a man in a ski mask and sunglasses pointing a gun directly at her face. He forces her back into the bathroom. He tells her to undress, and he proceeds to assault her. And it doesn't end there. He then walks her at gunpoint down the hall into another classroom where he rapes her. It goes on for what she says feels like forever. And then he stands up, he looks her in the eyes, and he tells her not to move until he's gone. I imagine once she can't hear the man anymore in the vicinity, Amy bolts. She runs out into the hallway. The first person she sees is the custodian or the janitor, and she yells, "Call the police. I was just assaulted." She gets to a phone and she says, "This is Amy Harrison, Andrew Harrison's wife. I was molested at my school." So let's be clear, the police know who Amy is, and that's because her husband Andrew was a local officer. So when the 911 call came in, they're moving especially fast because this is their colleague, their friend. And they collect everything, and I mean everything. They're like, they're on the spot. A lot of times we tell stories and police are just not on top of things. At this time they are. They collect every piece of evidence that they can. They take the whole rug from the classroom. They take the railing off the stairs, anything that this man could have touched. In the meantime, Amy unfortunately has to undergo a rape kit at the hospital, and she never misses a detail. She gives a full statement, and she remembers every haunting detail of her assault. She says that at one point when she was kind of like on the ground, maybe like bent over, his face was next to hers, and she noticed that he hadn't shaved in a few days, and his whiskers were strawberry blonde. She also remembers that he wasn't wearing shoes, only socks, and the socks were dirty. She said like he had been walking in leaves or grass or like through a yard. So the socks explains why she never heard footsteps down the hallway or anything like that, because he wasn't wearing any shoes. This wasn't just a random attack. He knew exactly how to not leave behind DNA. He avoided touching surfaces. He took off his shoes. He was careful. And this is 1997. Not everyone knew about forensic science like they do now. This screamed one thing to investigators. He He's either law enforcement or he's a serial rapist that knows how to get away with things and not get caught.
And it's definitely like targeted too, if it's on the weekend. She's not supposed to be there.
Yeah. How would you even know she was there? Like a church service is going on down the hallway. Like you, I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah. And that makes it more, I guess, tricky.
Yeah.
To sneak around the church people.
Yeah. Which is odd. It makes you think it's very targeted. So we know that he was careful with the DNA, but he wasn't that careful because they did get DNA. And they run it through CODIS, the Combined DNA Index System, which matches DNA from crime scenes to offenders. And nothing. Police do what they do a lot of times, and they start asking people to just go get tested so that they can just rule out people in this town. I didn't touch on this before, but this is Rogers, Arkansas. Kylie, you were there. You were in Northwest Arkansas not too long ago. Northwest Arkansas now is like this booming, like, highly populated, like highly as in like for Arkansas, it's a very populated city. It's not a small town anymore. But back in 1997, it's what you would still consider like small town vibes. Everybody knows everyone. They don't lock doors. There's not a lot of crime. It's then a small town. I mean, it's probably considered a small town to most people who live in bigger towns. But for Arkansas, the Northwest Arkansas area is a lot different than it used to be and a lot different than it was during this story in 1997. So anyways, just a little background. So police start testing people in town. They start running it through everyone that Amy knows so that they can see if the DNA matches anybody that she may have come into contact with. But they couldn't place him. She works with investigators to develop a sketch. She using like these overlays, like these transparent sheets of different facial features, and she pieces them together to create a rough image of her attacker. So they're going through these images and they're like, was his face shaped like this? Was his face shaped like this? And then they'll take facial hair and they'll slide it through the transparent thing and it matches up and they're able to create a sketch that way. Another reason why they want everyone around Amy to come forward and get voluntarily tested is because they also want to see who doesn't come forward, who doesn't get tested. And another piece of information is while the attack was going on, the rapist actually asks Amy, do you recognize my voice? So that's another little like little, you know, hint that she knows this attacker.
That's creepy.
Yeah. So the whole time she's trying to think like, do I know this man? Can I place this voice? She says she can't. So it's just kind of open-ended right now, but they want to see who comes forward, who doesn't. Then after we have this rough sketch, police start circulating it around. And one of the church members from that day comes forward and they say that they saw a man who matches this sketch leaving the school and getting into a blue pickup truck. So Rogers PD gets a little help from the Little Rock Police Department and they get a list of every blue truck registered in the county. Later that night, an officer spots one parked at a home north of town. They knock on the door and the man that answers is obviously not their suspect. He's a lot older. He's a very older gentleman. And he does not match the description, like, at all. And the way that they ruled him out so quickly, I don't know his age, but it seems like maybe they were like, okay, this is an old, old, decrepit man. I don't think it's him.
Also, how many blue pickup trucks are in that county? There's got to be a lot.
I'm sure there's a lot. So that was kind of just like a fizzled out lead. Leads keep trickling in, but nothing seems to pan out. Amy begins to accept that this monster might never be caught. Now, here's where there's like this weird little thing in 1997. The legal clock starts to come into play. At that time, Arkansas had a 6-year statute of limitations on Class Y felonies, which includes the rape. So that means if police haven't arrested or issued an arrest warrant for a suspect within 6 years, the case can't be prosecuted, even if they find out who it is. Police know that like their time is ticking, and as it draws closer and closer, it starts getting more and more intense. 5 years after Amy's assault, police get creative. They look at Wisconsin and they see that they were doing this thing called like a Doe DNA warrant. Basically, if you have a DNA profile that matches one specific person, which we know DNA profiles usually do, but you don't know who that DNA belongs to, you can actually write a warrant that names the DNA itself, and that will stop the statute of limitations because you have an arrest warrant for that individual. So it's kind of like a loophole in the law. So you can write an arrest warrant that says, blah, 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 blah. We're arresting this person. And to identify that person, you would put their sequence of DNA. So it's like this creative little loophole.
That is very smart.
Yes. So Arkansas is like, let's just see if we can do what Wisconsin's doing and just see if a judge will sign it. Arkansas police draw up this arrest warrant and the judge signs off on it. So their statute of limitations is stopped. I think it's called told. Is that right, Kylie? Legal term? I can't remember. I'm searching. So now they have to find the person who matches that DNA. Let's shift gears a little bit and jump forward. Now we are in Gateway, Arkansas, a tiny town near the Missouri line. At this time, there is a population of 405 people in this town. And for most of history, they've only had one law enforcement officer. Just one. They may have more now, I don't know, but when this happened, there's just one. And this man's name is Grant Hardin. Grant Hardin is a family man. He has a wife and he has a daughter named Madison. He goes to church every Sunday, and people say that he loved being a cop. And his wife says that Grant's the only person she's ever trusted. But underneath that was a very different story. So Grant is very intense. He's muscular. He's authoritarian. He becomes the police chief, and he also becomes the town constable and also I think like a probation officer or some kind of corrections officer. So he's pretty high up in this like town, if you can call it high up. There are only 405 people. So, you know,
he's basically running the whole town though.
Yeah, basically running the whole town. And this man is aggressive. He kind of like abuses his power. He carries a gun on and off duty, and he pulls it on citizens any situation that he wants to. He would chase down cars, like pull people over for no reason. He'd chase cars for no reason. And then if he like got into like a traffic altercation with somebody, he would just like flash his service weapon at them. So he's like very much abusive of his power.
That's the problem when you only have one cop. They have no one to answer to.
Exactly. So in the spring of 2016, he actually got into a fight with a man named James Appleton. Now, James Appleton is a city employee at Gateway. I think he works in like the water department. How this altercation like occurred was that Grant Hardin was driving through James's overgrown lot, like patrolling the area. So he's like driving through this guy's empty lot. And it's overgrown, and he hits a stump, and then he demands that James Appleton pay to fix his patrol car. Now, James is like not someone to just be like run over. You know, he's like, no, I'm not doing that. Like, that's not my problem. That's not my responsibility. You were driving on private property and now you want me to fix your patrol car. Like, that's not how it works. Obviously, Grant doesn't like this. And he's like, you can't do that. Like, I have all the power. So it's like this ongoing like rivalry between these two men for a bit of time. Things escalated and the city council is like, enough is enough. Like, they tell Hardin, you need to resign or you're going to be fired. It's not just over this incident. It's like all of the things that Grant Hardin's done. They're like, you can't be pulling your service weapon on citizens for no reason. You can't just pull people over because you want to, you know? So after 4 months, Grant Hardin decides to forcefully resign. But his resentment towards James Appleton doesn't go away. James Appleton is driving through town February 23rd, 2017. He pulls over to the side of a rural road, and at that same time, John Bray, a local cattleman, passes by. He sees James on the phone pulled off to the side, and just behind him is another vehicle, a white car. So Bray kind of keeps going. He's like obviously slowing down this road, and he passes the two vehicles pulled off to the side of the road, and he recognizes both the person in the white car and the person in the truck. And the person in the truck was Mr. Appleton. So he kind of like gives him like a little bit of a wave, and he can see that he's on the phone in the car. So he kind of just gives him like a half wave, and he keeps going, and he's driving like, you know, pretty slowly around these cars pulled over. Bray keeps going, and then he hears a gunshot, loud and close. The white car speeds up and is now behind Mr. Bray. Then he sees the white car turn off to the left on a different road. So this is when Mr. Bray decides to turn his car around and go back and check on his friend, James Appleton. He turns around, he comes back to the truck, and he sees James Appleton slumped over the wheel. He'd been shot in the face with a shotgun, and he's definitely dead. Bray immediately calls the police and tells them, I know who did this. because I know that car and I know exactly where it went. It belongs to Grant Hardin. Hardin's family says that around the time of the murder, he was just in the yard. Of course, he's unemployed at the time, but he, before the shooting had happened, Grant Hardin had told his family, hey, like, get ready for dinner tonight. I'm going to take you guys out to dinner. The wife and the daughter are inside kind of just like getting ready for dinner. And they say that then Grant like leaves and drives his car somewhere. Then when he comes back, he's like all flustered. He's upset. He rushes them into the car and he takes them to dinner. At this dinner, he's saying like really weird things like, I love you guys so much. Like, I love you. Like, if I don't see you again, then this, this, and this. So they're like, what the heck is going on? On the way home, they're coming back home and they pass the crime scene. There's many police there and they're kind of doing like almost like a little traffic stop. So each car that goes through, they stop, they ask them who they are, they question them a little bit, and then they keep going. Obviously, Grant's not going to keep going because when the police get to his car, he gives them his name and he's immediately arrested. He went right back down his same road and I don't know. So they immediately arrest Hardin and they take him back to the police station for questioning. Now, remember, Hardin is a former cop and he knows his rights and he doesn't say a word during the interrogation. But that doesn't matter to police because they already have enough evidence to charge him. So they charge him, they book him, and they collect his DNA. And when they run his DNA through CODIS, it matches the DNA from Amy Harrison's rape kit from 1997. Amy is given a photo lineup. And she immediately and very surely identifies Grant Hardin after 21 years. And this is what's so weird. There is seemingly no connection between the two. No reason that he picked her. The only like kind of connection is that Gateway and Rogers are kind of close to each other. And that's it. Which I find so weird. And there's never any explanation in anything that I have ever read about why he chose her, why he chose to walk into that school that day and rape Amy.
Yeah, and she wouldn't have recognized his voice.
Yeah, I don't know if he thinks he's like some like superstar of this town and like everybody should recognize his voice, but she's like, I don't, you know, she doesn't know who he is. And it's been driving me crazy because I'm like, what is the connection between these two? There's obviously none, but like, How did he even pick this to do this?
All I can think of is like he saw her and just followed her around.
Yeah.
Just picked her.
Very creepy. So Hardin pleads guilty to both crimes, first degree murder and rape. He's sentenced to 30 years for murder and 50 years for the rape. And that should have been it. Except it wasn't. May 25th, 2025, Hardin escapes. Surveillance cameras show him dressed like a prison guard, walking through the secured gate at North Central Unit in Calico Rock, which is a medium security prison here in Arkansas. And then 2 hours later, someone finally realizes that he's gone. Obviously, it's like this mass search, and they say that Hardin has a major advantage. He knows how law enforcement operates. He's 6 feet tall, he's 259 pounds, he's a white male, and he is extremely dangerous. The FBI join the manhunt. They get bloodhounds, helicopters, drones, and they start searching the Ozark Mountains. But this terrain is rough, and they get these bloodhounds that start tracking his scent, and then we get major rainstorms last week. They have completely lost his scent, and they're aimlessly searching all around Arkansas. And for those of you that have never been to Arkansas, there are a lot of rural places everywhere you go, and the terrain is pretty rugged. So the FBI started off offering a $10,000 reward for any information leading to his arrest. And then after a couple days, that was up to $20,000. They're still searching for him as of right now.
I have no words. It's insane.
Like, what a fail. He walked right out. There's a picture of him. And he like has this little like dolly thing, like acting like he's carrying stuff out of the prison. He has on this all black uniform. It says something on the back. I don't know what it says, but it has something in white on the back. And he just walked out. He literally just walked out. I've seen articles that said that he worked in the kitchen and he was maybe able to like, that's how he was able to gain access to something that looked like a guard uniform or make something. I don't know. It's freaking insane. I also have heard from someone that knows Arkansas Small, y'all. I've heard from someone who heard from someone that works in the police department there that he also stole gallons or a gallon or multiple gallons. I don't know, gallons of peanut butter. So you can survive on peanut butter and water for a long time.
I guess you can. There's a lot of protein and calories in peanut butter. But I saw one article because it looked like a guard uniform, but the article said it wasn't their guard uniform. Like, he didn't take it out of, like, a supply closet there.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe, like, he made it or, like, someone maybe brought it to him.
Well, I guess if you work in the kitchen, I mean, I'm thinking, like, Orange is the New Black. That's how they smuggled things in through, like, the food trucks.
True. They initially thought that he was going to be traveling north. Articles say that he's traveling south. So.
But do they even know?
I don't know. I don't know. It's so there's been sightings of him and they are down south. There was one sighting that said that he had crawled out of like a, you know, the ditches that go under roads.
Mm-hmm.
That he had crawled out of one of those and a lady was driving by and saw him crawl out of it. I think that was in Conway, Arkansas, if I'm not wrong. And then the girls I sent a picture to the other day, I think it was 2 days ago, and there was like 7 helicopters flying over my house. I don't know if they were searching for him. I can't say yes or no. Obviously, I have no idea, but it was a little odd.
We can assume.
I can only assume that that might be what was going on. But they say that he's very dangerous, that he will not go willingly. Lock your doors if you live in Arkansas because they have no idea where he's at. Obviously, like the woods. I've also seen some people say that he knew the cave system really well in Arkansas. So I'm sure they're searching that.
Well, if they think he's made it like all the way to Conway, he's gone pretty far on foot.
Yeah, on foot. And it's like he's law enforcement, so he knows not to go back to his friend's house. He knows not to go back to his family's house. In my opinion, I don't think anyone's helping him. I don't think he has access to a vehicle because I think that we would have heard about it. You know, we would have like be on the lookout for a white pickup truck or something like that. Somebody would have their vehicle stolen. Like someone would, everyone in Arkansas knows about this by now. And if somebody's property was missing, I think they would report it, you know?
Yeah. That would be my first thing or thought would be like, okay, I got to steal a car. I have to break into someone's house and change clothes and get a weapon. I'm sure everyone in Arkansas has a weapon in their house.
Yeah.
So I'm sure he's like obtained something by now.
Surely. And there's also like a bunch of abandoned like barns and structures in Arkansas and in the Ozark Mountains that he could just hide out in. So he's on the loose. And if you're in or around Arkansas, even in the Missouri area, anywhere around Arkansas, whatever the hell the states are around, be on the lookout. He's 6 foot tall. He's 259 pounds. He's a white male. In the pictures that they're putting out, he's bald. I don't know if he can grow hair, if he chooses not to, but he's bald in the pictures. We will keep you updated about this case. I surely will because I'm sitting here in around central Arkansas right now. And if you have any information about his whereabouts, obviously, you already know, call the FBI immediately. Stay aware, lock your doors, and stay safe. But this case is a terrifying reminder that monsters can hide in plain sight and they can wear badges too. Also, know that if it wasn't for the murder of Mr. Appleton, who was like a beloved member of the community and a great brother and family man, according to his family, they never would have found out the rape that happened. So, you know, there's that. But yes, also victims too. So.
Well, it is weird that he got 30 years for the murder, but 50 for the rape.
I know. That was a little odd. I guess they were just thinking either way, it's a life sentence. I'm not sure. I just have this weird thing that I just don't understand how he would one day decide to go commit a rape, do it with such like level of planning and detail, and then never do it again.
I mean, that we know of.
That's what I'm saying. I feel like there has to be, I hope there's not, but it just seems like a very odd strategic thing to do and never do again.
There could have been some before, some after, and he just slipped up with that one.
Yeah.
But the murder seems like very like rageful.
Yeah. Yeah. by no means do I think he's like a serial killer, you know, killing for no reason. I think he's just honestly a hothead who had too much power at the time. And I guess at the time he wasn't even an officer, but I mean, he had definitely thought very highly of himself and thought he could do whatever he wanted, no matter what. So, yeah.
Well, we'll hope and pray he is caught, and we'll pray for Holly as well.
Yeah. I'll let you know if I find him. I know tons of Arkansans who would love to go hunt him down and find him, because that's how they are here. So I hope someone does, and I hope they get that $20,000 and he's caught, because I can't imagine being poor Amy now thinking that he's locked away for life and now it's a huge manhunt in Arkansas. But anyways, that is the story of the rapist, the murderer, and the escapee, Grant Hardin.